At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Omar Al-Khatib, Director, Corporate Affairs and Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for joining us on our fourth quarter conference call. On the line with us today, we have Murad Al-Khatib, President and CEO of Alliance Grain Traders, Lori Ireland, our Chief Financial Officer, and Gaytan Barasa, our Chief Operating Officer. Before we get started, I would like to remind everyone that today's call may include forward-looking statements. Such forward-looking statements are given as of the date of this call and involve certain risks and uncertainties. A number of factors and assumptions were applied in the formulation of such statements, and actual results could differ materially. This call may also include references to certain non-IFRS financial measures. For additional information with respect to forward-looking statements, factors and assumptions, as well as reconciliation to IFRS measures, we direct you to our news release, our website, as well as our recent filings on SEDAR. With that, I'll turn things over to Murad for some comments, and then we'll go to questions. Murad?
Thank you, Omar. Welcome to everyone on the call this morning. The 2013 year has begun with continuing signals of recovery in pulses and staple food markets we've been forecasting throughout 2012. However, this recovery is appearing at a slower rate than we believed would have been the case. We are optimistic that the recovery will continue, however, and with it bring normalization to global markets through the first half of 2013 and into the normal North American harvest period. Consumption demand for our products, value-added pulses and staple foods, we believe remains strong in consumption markets. While import demand has been impaired in the short term, as is evidenced by the decreased export volumes from Canada, the U.S., and Australia throughout 2012, we are confident in our belief that demand normalization as a result of macroeconomic improvement in 2013 may bring the earnings recovery throughout the year that we have forecasted. This may result in local markets replenishing their estimated lower depleted market stocks, resulting in improved and more normalized business operations for AGT. The macroeconomic headwinds seen in 2012 certainly have affected our markets and therefore our company in a dramatic fashion in 2012. While we stated our opinion that staple foods were typically less affected by these types of macroeconomic issues, the 2012 year has demonstrated no sector in any aspect of the economy is immune to the economic impact of a truly global economy. We feel our thesis, though, that capital flows to staple foods is still valid. However, the food sector will recover more quickly than other discretionary goods. As economic conditions improve with regard to currency volatility and credit liquidity, we expect to experience improvement in our activities, normalization in our business, and with it, improvements in our earnings and our margins. We've seen a positive trend in the past few quarters with EBITDA and gross margins improving along with reasonable volumes in terms of metric tons moving through our global facilities. We're certainly optimistic that the trends we have seen in the latter part of 2012 may continue, and with it, improvements to our business, showing the earnings potential of our superior global asset base and what that base may deliver in terms of earnings, potentially seeing a return to more robust levels of growth and profitability. I'd just like to call on Lori Ireland, our CFO, to give you a quick summary of our fourth quarter and year-end 2012 results. Lori?
Thanks, Murad. Good morning, everyone. For the past two quarters, we've been saying that AGT is continuing to focus on the implementation of cost-cutting initiatives and continued tracking of metrics for cash flow management down to the subsidiary level. This hasn't changed. Although we are pleased to see a gradual recovery in the sales gross margins, this doesn't mean we will take our eye off discretionary costs and the cash collection cycle. Our view of utilizing synergies across our global platform to create additional value for our shareholders has not changed. We continue to see gradual profit improvement as gross profit improved from $65.73 per ton in quarter three of 2012 to $73.70 per ton in quarter four. And adjusted gross profit improved from $79.16 per ton in quarter three to $85.37 per ton in quarter four. Although the increase is small, it's moving in the right direction. We are, however, still experiencing some margin compression resulting from macroeconomic issues. In addition, there was approximately $400,000 of margin impact relating to a major train derailment in South Australia, which caused delays in shipping and resulted in sales discounts granted to our affected buyers. One-time costs include costs incurred during the quarter relating to certain financing and legal expenses, stock-based option expense, and approximately $1 million in total costs relating to the train derailment in South Australia I mentioned earlier. Although accounts receivable increased to $183.2 million at December 31st compared to $171.5 million at December 31st, 2011, and compared to $178.6 million at September 30th, 2012, this is due to overall increased sales tons during the latter part of the year. Inventory levels increased to $188.9 million at December 31st, 2012, compared to $183.3 million at December 31st, 2011, and increased when compared to $141.8 million at September 30th, 2012. The increase in inventory levels is the result of increased grain receipts during the quarter ended December 31st, 2012 at many of our AGT facilities, as well as inventory storage and grain bank programs. This inventory is anticipated by management to be converted to cash during the first quarter of 2013 and is a normal seasonal increase in inventory, largely attributable to Australian harvest and inventory received for the late quarter surge in demand for January and February shipments experienced in Canada. While we are aware of investor awareness of increased working capital levels, this inventory increase is a positive sign of the resumption of demand forecast to improve in early 2013. General and admin and marketing and sales and distribution costs are a combined $46.1 million for the year ended December 31, 2012, compared to a combined $44.8 million for the year ended December 31, 2011. Although the global footprint at AGT has grown when compared to the prior year, we feel that these costs have stayed in line as a result of our continuing programs aimed at cost savings initiatives. We saw an increase in the combined general and admin and marketing sales and distribution costs in the fourth quarter as compared to the third quarter of 2012, largely as a result of one-time costs relating to the financing and to the derailment in Australia. In addition, AGT has additional legal and accounting services incurred during the fourth quarter. Income tax expense for the quarter ended December 31, 2012 was $1 million, an increase from $22,000 for the September 2012 quarter, and was $4 million for the year ended December 31, 2012, compared to $1.8 million for the year ended December 31, 2011. Much of this increase is due to adjustments of intercompany advances receivables in AGT estimate. AGT estimates that the overall corporate tax rate is in the range of 26 to 26.5%, depending on the jurisdiction of earnings or losses each period. Non-cash foreign exchange for the year ended December 31, 2012 was a recovery of $4 million compared to an expense of $28.8 million last year, reflecting decreased volatility in the various currencies of which loans and receivables are denominated. Non-cash foreign exchange for the 3 months ended December 31, 2012 was a recovery of $72,000 compared to a loss of $2.9 million for the 3 months ended September 2012. We are pleased to report that in January, AGT signed an agreement to increase and extend its syndicated credit facility. This agreement includes an aggregate amount of $270 million senior secured facilities and a $30 million accordion. The facility has an expiry date of January 24, 2016, with an option to be extended for an additional year with the consent of the syndicate. Also, in February, the company closed an offering of senior secured second lien notes. These notes are due in 5 years. This agreement is for $125 million with gross proceeds of $124,375,000. In addition to general corporate purposes, the proceeds have been used towards the retirement of high interest operating credits and has allowed us to de-risk our balance sheet by replacing short-term foreign subsidiary credits with a 5-year facility and ensuring more interest rate certainty on our emerging markets operating credits, which has illustrated volatility in the past quarters with escalating interest costs. AGT and its subsidiaries are in compliance with covenants at December 31, 2012. And finally, dividends of 60 cents per share were paid out during 2012. Thank you.
Thanks, Lori. We certainly feel positive with regards to the results we've been able to show during the difficult 2012 year. As a company, we have undertaken many initiatives to strengthen our business in these difficult periods that we feel will benefit us greatly as and when conditions improve. On the sales and merchandising side, most have traditionally looked to lentil exports to evaluate our business, but I can say that the diversification initiatives we have undertaken to add more products like beans, chickpeas, milled wheat, and pasta have been increasingly successful to reduce our reliance on global lentil markets. We are focusing on new sales and distribution opportunities in markets we had considered secondary or where our position was secondary, such as South America, the Caribbean, and Southeast Asia. We now feel that these markets will show great growth potential for us in the future. As we are developing new significant market presences in core markets, such as our planned entry into India with merchandising operations and potentially future processing in, there, and China with our announced facility project in Tianjin, these activities spread our business over a number of products and locations. As markets improve, we feel that increased volumes of pulses and staple foods overall may have a positive impact on returning our capacity utilization incrementally to higher results. In our high fixed cost business, capacity utilization increases can positively affect our earnings and margins. And of course, we continue to be focused on our core markets like Turkey, the Middle East, North Africa. We will continue to work towards making incremental margin gains in these markets as well. Strength in these regions is what keeps AGT strong in our business overall. Our new pulse ingredient initiative with our new facility in Minot, North Dakota, commencing commissioning, any day, we expect will provide further benefit by augmenting and improving our whole and value-added pulses and staple foods business by adding the ability to supply pulse ingredients, flours, proteins, fibers, and starches. These products are attractive to food and feed companies producing branded products for retail and food service sale, as well as pet food and animal feed products to consumers around the globe. Consumers demanding a high protein, high fiber, non-GMO vegetable protein source. We forecast these opportunities may be significant, and we feel as a company we have taken the correct steps to set up and implement this business unit. Our recently announced agreement with Cargill, a multi-year exclusive supply and marketing agreement for North American pulse proteins, demonstrates recognition by major ingredient and food companies that pulse ingredients can provide nutritional benefits, cost savings, and product advantages to food, branded feed, and pet food suppliers. This is certainly a position we have held for a long time. However, lentils are still a big part of our core pulses business and staple foods. Increases in lentil exports from Canada, the U.S., and Australia, as well as distribution into key markets in Turkey and the Middle East, North Africa region, as well as India and the Indian subcontinent, are still important components to our expected normalization of our business in 2013. Our market intelligence through our network of customers, agents, and merchandisers tells us that in most key markets for lentils, we estimate that stock levels are at lower depleted levels. Importers are continuing to buy hand-to-mouth, supplementing lower local production levels with just what they need to keep their own programs going. Decreasing production potential in Turkey, as well as reports of a poor harvest in India, both of these countries as significant domestic consumers as well as suppliers, is an important part of the normalization of stock and supply levels globally. Rationalization of acres in Canada, as the largest exporter of lentils, and the U.S. and Australia as well, we expect may help to correct the supply-import-demand imbalance that currently exists, as well as having a positive impact on our capacity utilization as global market activities increase. A return to approximate 2008 production and supply levels, we expect may assist global markets to correct themselves with regards to price and import volumes. Lower production is not a bad thing for AGT. In fact, as we have consistently maintained, AGT requires only adequate production in its major operational origins, while production and supply would currently be more than ample. However, when maize seeding in North America is viewed, it's still a long way off, and a lot can change in the period coming up. Economic conditions in emerging markets are reported as improving. This steady and gradual improvement is reported by the Institute of International Finance, a global association of major banks, is another sign of global healing, with trade finance improving. This is a hopeful signal for developing countries hit hard by the Eurozone recession and financial turmoil. As the consumption regions begin to feel their lower depleted market stocks, in part aided by these economic improvements, we expect that we will draw down the high carry-in stocks, and in the medium term, this will assist in returning margins and volumes to more normalized levels, having, we expect, a positive impact on AGT's earnings. The next significant event in global pulse markets is India. And from market reports we receive, as well as the media, conditions look, in our estimation, to be impaired in the current Rabi season, as they were in the Kharif season before, when the monsoon rains were deemed deficient. I was just in India in the past few weeks with our COO, Gaitan, and conditions there were actually wet for this type of year, with significant rainfalls reported just prior to the harvest periods, which may have the further effect of decreasing already reduced pulse production. Reports in the media of heavy rains in northern regions, you know, may have that effect of affecting the production in India. And available stocks within Canada and Australia, with its new crop, coupled with the potential for high imports to the region, are positive developments for the pulse sector and AGT's forecasted recovery in 2013. As a management team, we've been focused on initiatives aimed at cost reduction, operational efficiencies, and prudent capital expenditure management. This has included our programs towards balance sheet initiatives, including working capital management and increasing inventory and receivable turn targets for all our global management, thereby shortening our cash cycle. With this, we are optimistic that debt issued to finance working capital may be reduced as a percentage of revenues and operational efficiencies may be gained as our business flows normalize along with global pulse and staple food markets. We do anticipate debt levels to normalize in 2013 with these initiatives. As our business grows, we believe our strategy to ensure the correct level and type of debt will allow us to maintain a healthy balance sheet to fund our growth and expansions from free cash flow, additional debt, or equity as required. We're pleased to have completed both the recently announced $300 million senior secured credit facility and the $125 million senior second lien notes. Viewed together, our credit financing provides AGT with additional certainty on our balance sheet for both duration and interest rates. Access to capital, we feel, is an important strategic advantage for our company over our competitors. Along with the access to capital, strengthened markets and a diverse asset base are essential components of the success of what we have built over the years and what we hope to enjoy as global staple food and ingredient markets continue their recovery in 2013. These steps were critical in building the advantages and opportunities that we have in our sector. We've taken the steps. We are now ready to show the earnings power of our asset base. As markets normalize, we're confident in our ability to execute the strategy, and we will demonstrate the earnings potential of our assets by increasing our utilization in our global system, providing for the improved margins and earnings. I thank you for your interest in Alliance Grain Traders, and I'm going to open it up for questions.
Operator, can we go to questions?
Certainly, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star, then one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star, then two. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing any keys. In order to accommodate as many callers as possible, one question from each person will be taken. To ask a supplemental question, please press star and one again to rejoin the question queue. If time does not allow for response to all the questions, the Alliance Grain Traders Investor Relations Group will follow up after the call. Once again, anyone who has a question, please press star then one at this time. The first question today is from Jacob Belt of CIBC. Please go ahead.
Morning. Question on asset utilization. You made a few qualitative comments here about things are improving, but you just help us out. What the improvement has been like in 2012 and expectations into 2013 from a numeric perspective, and maybe if you can talk a little bit or differentiate between Canada and Turkey.
Okay. Let me take that question for the first part. To comment on 2012, you know, looking at the utilization over October and November, utilization kept going at levels quite equivalent to the quarter three period, where we reported to be running around 52 to 53% utilization. So really quite, sluggish in terms of demand, Jacob, for, you know, traditionally a higher seasonal period of quarter four. And so, you know, while we started to see margin improvement in late quarter three, into quarter four, it was kind of, you know, business as usual, but nothing stellar, that's for sure. And the export stats show that. But, you know, at some point, we have to continue to make decisions about, you know, utilization of our assets versus strategies to improve margins. And, you know, we actually did, take the conscious decision to hold back a little bit in terms of our desire to deliver, you know, product in at those margin levels. And towards the end of November to early December, we started to see demand improvement. So we started to see, with the Australian harvest starting and, India starting to recognize that the crop potential there was actually, potentially impaired, we started to see activity, Jacob, towards the end of the year. So if we look at our December utilization, I'd say we certainly had an improvement, you know, in the last, say, 2 to 3 weeks of December. And I think that the positive thing was that, we were able to actually put sales on in that period for the first quarter. And so, I would say, Gaetan, do we have a sense of the utilization in quarter four still running around that?
Right around that,
52, 53. So we would have finished, again, significantly underutilized in the Canadian platform in particular. The Australian platform, of course, was also quite underutilized because the harvest didn't come until end of November, December. And the Turkish asset base actually had a good utilization period. The pasta, continues to run at, relatively speaking, Jacob, full utilization. And the pulses business continues its efforts on diversification, expanding the chickpea and bean platforms, and the split yellow peas and other products outside of the red lentil platform. So I would suggest that Turkish utilization was up slightly, Canadian was stable, but we started to see, some very, positive signs for quarter one. We're expecting the 2013 utilization to build back up to, two-thirds utilization by mid-year. And then we've been quite clear with our targets to increase utilization by a minimum of 3% per annum over the course of a five-year cycle to get our assets up to full utilization by the end of a five-year plan, providing that organic earnings growth just from the utilization of our platform that we've currently built. Now, part of that capacity utilization boost may be the conversion of assets into the food ingredient platform in 2014 and 2015. We'll have to see how that all goes as a part of the rollout of that strategy.
And if you don't see that improvement of the asset utilization, at what point do you start talking about rationalization of some of these assets in Western Canada?
Jacob, when I can, sit down with you as an analyst or as a significant investor and have a discussion about the fact that I would consider that the macroeconomic headwinds were manageable and there is still a significant underutilization of my asset base, I'm not prepared to consider that. I believe strongly in our ability to get our assets back up utilized in 2013, and I believe strongly that we'll have the ability to show that each asset was added for a specific processing or a freight or a locational advantage, and that when we get each of those assets running, to its utilization, you just look at the, in your model, if you look at each percentage of utilization, considering the high fixed cost component nature of our business, there's a very significant contribution to earnings of every percentage boost. So we're still confident that that will happen. And frankly, instead of rationalization, I believe the more likely outcome, Jacob, is conversion of capacity into lines of business that are showing growth. And so that's where we're really focused today.
The next question comes from Christine Healy of Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Hi, guys. I have a question on your revenue breakdown. Pretty healthy revenue for the quarter, but I noticed that there was a significant increase in the sales of rice and other commodities and your miscellaneous. So that line item there is about $60 million in sales, which is about four times what's averaged over the last couple of years. Maybe can you give us some color just as to why there was such growth in Q4, if this is rice, you're ramping up. Just whether or not this is sustainable.
I can answer that. The rice, other commodities, and miscellaneous is where we end up, segmenting out some of the traded tons. So there are some very significant activities going on in the United Nations and governmental tendering sectors related to the North Africa post-crisis programs and the current Middle East refugee programs. So, we expect that these, revenues on, the supply of items, basic commodity items, like we're doing our regular, tenders of lentils and pasta and rice, but we're also doing participation of different commodities like sugar. And we're also involved now with the United Nations program on what they call family parcels. So we're actually assembling family parcels for aid programs, which actually contain lentils, sugar, tea, salt, wheat flour, vegetable oil, tomato paste. So we're actually assembling these family packs, and we're delivering them to the Syrian refugee, or the Turkish side of the refugee camps for the United Nations for the Syrian refugees that are displaced as a part of the crisis. So, these are good business opportunities as a result of a very sad and critical, political event. So we expect those to continue into 2013, but that's the main reason for the boost is large-scale tenders in other commodity items.
Okay, and that wasn't there in past quarters, or was it, and it was just recorded in a different segment?
No, it wasn't there. These are new business initiatives. We always said that as a part of Arab Spring and as a part of the political unrest, in 2011 and 12, we had earnings effect of those political crises, which were, the currency instabilities in the region, port disruptions in places like Egypt and other Middle Eastern destinations. But at some point, you'll recall my anecdotal views. In order to build civil society and institutions, people must have full tummies. And so there would be food demand that would be a part of any post-crisis conflict program that would provide significant opportunities for the Turkish platform. We're starting to see that, and we expect that to continue in 13 and 14.
The next question comes from Mark Robinson of Cormark. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Yeah, my question actually related to that. So I noticed you you changed your trading and distribution business, the name to Supply Chain Management Distribution, and that's fine. But I also noticed that there's been a material decline in the margin per ton, notwithstanding a material increase in the volumes. So is that because of this same issue that Christine just talked about, trading-related revenue?
There's two components to that supply chain management distribution. One is Portman's and Advanced Seeds. Okay, those are, literally focused more on origination, bring it into a supply position, supply it into high-end retail food ingredient type companies. The other side of what we do on that is things like the Family Parcel United Nations. That, again, is originating products from different sources, including our own factories, and assembling them into family packs and putting them into tenders. Those types would have a lower margin. Now, that being said, I want to, caution all of you as analysts. We only reported you one quarter of these as a part of the segmented, and we did it, only to increase the speed at which you would have comparative financial figures. So when we released one quarter, some of the analysts jumped on the fact that, we had $160 a ton margin in that segment.
I think I'd really encourage you to look at a 12-month cycle and form your expectations. We believe that the normalized margins, because some of these tenders aren't going to be reoccurring all the time, and they're higher volume and potentially some lower margin, although those tenders, the money turns very quickly, right? So it's all about turning our capital too. So if we can take a United Nations tender, assemble it, and deliver it, we get paid within 2 weeks and no risk. So we like those types of operations. The margin profile of that segment will likely be somewhere between the third quarter and the fourth quarter reporting. So I don't think it's going to be normalized as low as the fourth quarter. I don't think it's going to be as high as the third quarter. But again, every quarter you're going to have more data. And by the time you get to third quarter, you'll have a Q year over Q year comparison and a Q over Q comparison. So that'll give you much more meaningful basis from which to interpret data.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. Our next question comes from John Chu of AltaCorp Capital. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys. Just related to the utilization focus that you're having here, I noticed that in the MD&A, there's talks about potentially going into soybeans, cereal grains, oil seeds, and whatnot. Can you kind of elaborate on that in terms of timing, costs, presumably using the existing asset base, and what that might mean for margins?
Yeah, I think first part of that question, there is little to no incremental cost of utilizing our asset base for cereals, for oil seeds, and for soybeans. The soybean one, we have to react to the fact that there was almost no soybean acres in Saskatchewan in 2010, but by 2013, there's a forecast there could be up to 50,000 tons available in southeast Saskatchewan. Now, we happen to have facilities that are actually gentle handling facilities for our chickpea program and our green lentil programs that actually could be put into soybean processing for the higher end markets in Asia. Same thing with the cereals. I mean, with the wheat board coming down, just as a utilization initiative, we could do containerized cereals into specialty millers in Southeast Asia, again, is our focus on Indonesia, Thailand, Malaysia, the Philippines, you know, Vietnam, those areas. And it complements, John, our initiative in Australia to look at Australian containerized wheat programs. So, you know, while they're there and we mention them, they're part of the options that exist for us to boost the utilization of our asset base. That being said, I think it would be much more, you know, likely our goal is to increase beans, chickpeas, right, and other higher value, faba beans and other higher value items that are in our current major product range. Now, interestingly, when we look at product mix, we did the analysis for year end. One of the things that, you know, many of you look at, and I think it's a very important point for our analysts, you know, many of you think of lentils as, you know, the main part. And if I look at it, when I became a public company, lentils were 85% of my total book of products. In 2013, we forecast it to be around 35% of our total book of products. Okay, now if I look at what we've done in a very margin-constrained period, is we have built markets, facilities that are ready to rock and roll on chickpeas, beans, and you know, other value-added pulses that are not the lentil platform that showed the volatility in 2012. I think that's very, very positive.
The next question comes from Anup Prahar of GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. I just want to come back to the segmented disclosure you provided in the MD&A. So if I look at the EBITDA per ton on the pulse and grain side, it was up about 50%. But if I look at it on the supply chain management, I mean, it was down precipitously. So are you telling me that the decrease on the supply chain management on the EBITDA per ton, which went from $72 down to below $3, is all due to the fact that you're now doing refugee programs?
No, absolutely not. No, there's a, Laura, do you want to make your first comment on that?
Yeah, I guess there's a couple of things. In quarter three, we made some assumptions on how we're going to do some cost allocations, and we've looked at that again in quarter four. I think, you know, it does. There is some attributable to the refugee programs, but is I guess as well, we have some different allocations of general and admin and things like that that have moved between the segments in quarter four?
Yeah, like Anoop, listen, we have to be realistic here. Quarter three was the first quarter we ever did the segmented, okay? As we roll it out, you know, we rolled out to have comparative data. As we continue to refine the cost allocation, you know, what I can tell you is that looking at quarter three, you know, all the earnings we reported are accurate, but when we segment it out, you know, we believe that when we look at the cost allocation model, that we may have under-allocated costs into that supply chain management. I'll give you an example. If the trading and distribution business of Arbel, you know, in Russia, Ukraine, refugee programs, trading tender business for the governments is in that segment, then a portion of Arbel's corporate overheads need to be allocated to that segment as well. So over the course of this coming period, you know, we're refining the cost allocations into those segments. I think that, you know, what you need to do, as I said earlier, is it's not as high as quarter three. It's not as low as quarter four. You want to model it.
Look at the
you
year,
know,
I would say look
you
at
look
the
at the year-to-date, right? The year-to-date number, you know, on page 15 of this printed version of our MD&A, shows the supply chain management at gross profit of $88, adjusted gross profit at $90, and EBITDA per metric ton at $33. So that gives you a good indication of that business. Now, this shouldn't surprise you, and it did surprise some of the analysts, which, of course, just took one quarter of data and made some conclusions. We are not utilizing our assets in this supply chain management and distribution. So while we believe it's going to be a very interesting segment to continue to build, we still believe that our strongest margins are going to be in the segments in which we utilize our assets over time.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. The next question is from Robert Winslow of National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Robert.
Great. Murad, I just wanted to follow up on your opening comments here about the emerging markets, and a lot of them, a lot of the countries out there, you believe the stocks are diminished, and I believe you're probably right. We've seen that for a couple quarters now, and so there's going to be a replenishment period, kind of a catch-up. But at the end of the day, and maybe I'm misinterpreting what you're saying, I think the MD&A used the words hand-to-mouth. If that's true, doesn't that imply that consumption, or at least imports in these parts of the world, are matching consumption? So technically, that's the run rate level of consumption, and therefore the run rate level of throughput we should expect to see at your facilities, excluding what might be a period of catch-up to fill up the depleted stocks around the world. Am I looking at that correctly, or am I misinterpreting you?
Well, there's two aspects to that. I mean, one aspect is that yes, there needs to be a catch-up to have the sustainable level of stocks in the market to be able to have a normalized functioning market. You know, Robert, in markets like India, you know, the consumer consumes what is available, you know, in the wholesale markets. So the fact that lentils, let's say, haven't been imported doesn't mean that consumption isn't there if the product is available. So what we're looking at, you know, on a go-forward basis is we expect that Indian, Turkish, you know, and other areas are going to continue a stable to declining local production and a heightened level of imports. So from that perspective, we expect that the utilization of our assets will boost over time back to those more normalized levels. So, you know, while I was using the words hand-to-mouth in the MD&A, that was describing the prior periods. I mean, they were buying only what they required to be able to, well, required isn't even the right word, only what their risk appetite was willing to accept in a declining commodity price market in an unhedgeable commodity. Now, we believe that consumption actually came down not because of consumption coming down, but because of product availability in the markets. You know, we go consistently into market. We sit down with an importer in Dubai, and we say, well, what's the demand like? And he says, oh, there's no demand today. And yet you say to him, hey, if I had 20 containers, 500 tons of layered lentil sitting in the warehouse here today at this price, could you sell it? And he says, well, absolutely, I could sell it. So really what you're saying then is that your risk tolerance for import means you don't have the demand for import. Doesn't mean there's not a consumption demand for that product if it's available in the market. Now, as currencies have become more stable and as the markets are continuing to have, you know, legs in terms of activity, we're starting to see regular forward buying to facilitate orderly distribution in the markets. That's where we see, quote, normalization of the business coming back in. Now, oversupply has that tendency, Robert. When you look at global S&D, we were at around 3 million tons in 2008, up to 5 million tons by 2010. And if you look at forecast S&Ds back in 2013, we'll be back somewhere around 3 million tons again. So 2 million tons of production out of the market, that's a big overhang. So for investors to understand, if there's a stock you're trying to sell or buy in the stock market, if there's a big overhang, the price comes down. Same with lentil stocks. If there's a big overhang, prices come down. There's no more overhang.
The next question is a follow-up from Christine Healy of Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Thanks. I think the next question is for Lori. I just want to get a sense for what your balance sheet will look like in the first quarter. Can you give us just some detail on how much of your credit line you've paid down with the proceeds from your senior notes and what remaining CapEx for Minot was left in Q1? And maybe, Murad, you can talk about your strategic CapEx plans for the remainder of the year.
Yeah, I think in terms of our balance sheet, we've got about $5 million or so to go to complete the Minot project.
Okay.
From that you'll see in quarter one. We don't have a huge amount of CapEx other than that in quarter one. We have paid down with the proceeds of the high-yield notes, we paid down approximately $40 million of our operating credits. And as well in January, February, I don't obviously have March results yet, but we've seen our receivables turning quite well, a lot of cash collections. So I'm anticipating that we're going to see a definite improvement in our receivable and inventory levels in quarter one.
Now on a net debt basis, remember the transaction that we did, the $300 million syndication, has multiple tranches available depending on what we're using it for. So we have the $150 million, revolving borrowing base facility, which is our working capital facility. We have a $90 million term debt financing, which finished Minot, largely finished Minot and refinanced all the long-term debt. And then we have a $30 million CapEx, growth CapEx line that can be utilized for CapEx projects if we choose to in the next 3 years under the committed program. The $125 million retired all of the debts in Turkey. So, all of the operating credits with the exception of a couple of those short-term financings that we have, the Avalized drafts.
Yeah, you'll still see those in quarter one on the balance sheet just because of the due dates of them.
Yeah, the due dates. They're due in quarter two and quarter three. So when they're due, they'll be paid off as well, so the cash proceeds are there. So this was a debt replacement exercise, Christine, to ensure that we had term out on our debt and interest rate certainty because, in particular, our Turkish credits cost of debt was escalating dramatically, and we didn't want to be subject to that volatility. So we expect, good, strong results on our debt management going into 13.
The next question is a follow-up from Anup Prahar of GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just a two-part question. First of all, what is your total CapEx budget for 2013? And then second of all, in your earlier comments, Murad, I think it's you that said you would expect debt levels to normalize over the course of 2013. Can you give us some context for how we go about quantifying that comment?
Okay, yeah, and Anoop, thanks for helping me to remember the second part of the last question, because CapEx was a very important thing. I want to just ensure everybody unequivocally understands there will not be a resumption of large-scale CapEx until our earnings improve and until we're in a position to fund those largely from free cash flow. So we will continue in 2013 to look at the reinvestment of our depreciation amounts in the maintenance of our existing infrastructure. So that depreciation figure, can one of you guys help me out roughly? Have we
annually?
Got a rough figure?
$12 million a year annual.
So it's $12 million a year annual, and that's spread, Anoop, between part of it, which we would consider to be maintenance CapEx, and part of it is if we look at the $12 million depreciation, sorry, our CapEx budget won't all be maintenance at $12 million. We're looking at a portion of that depreciation reinvestment as maintenance CapEx, and then there will be small-scale asset improvements to improve earnings potential related to some of our assets. So if I look at 2013, I would anticipate CapEx budget to be around $10 million for the entire year. And that includes the $5 million to complete the Minot if we choose to expand the lines. So line one will be commissioning. In fact, they, I think, may have started motors yesterday on the plant, so we're pretty much on schedule on that. And we can add line two and line three depending on the ramp up of our sales program and the Cargill agreement. And then we're looking at small scale, you know, improvements. For instance, I can tell you that our marketing program on our high quality chickpeas and bean programs, we are under at full capacity utilization today on those programs as a result of this diversification initiative to bring our Leno platform down. And we may need to spend some small amounts to improve our capacity in some of those areas. So this is all positive stuff, but I expect that to continue out through 13. Normalization of debt levels. You know, if you calculate out, our target will be to reduce any of our foreign operations, the cash cycle should reduce to below 100 days. So this includes the total inventory time dwell. So inventory period plus the receivable period should be less than 100 days. And in certain jurisdictions like Canada, where we have a different system where they have on-farm storage, we should be in a position to reduce that to around 75 days. You know, so those are the type of initiatives. It could even be quicker than that. But
yeah.
Anyway, we'll set targets. Anoop, incremental targets at each sub-level have been established. They're now measurable, and bonuses will be allocated on the country manager's ability to meet those targets, thereby returning capital into AGT to pay down debt, which can then be readvanced to be opportunistic around the world. That's the plan of the refinancing and the plan of the working capital management. Now, again, part of the normalization of working capital is normalized demand. We need to be able to seasonally bump up, like you saw in quarter four. Don't take the quarter four buildup as anything but a positive sign that we were building up for the sales program in Jan, Feb, March. So Australian harvest came, demand was robust. So we're starting to see improved demand conditions. We need product in the right spots to be able to deliver that demand.
The next question is a follow-up from Robert Winslow of National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, Murad. I'm going to ask this question. I suspect you're not going to want to answer it, but I'm going to ask it anyway. A few years ago, we talked about the prospects given your platform to drive towards $100 million of EBITDA, and obviously we had an extraordinary event happen globally, and no one could prepare for that, but today, I look at consensus on 2014, so 2 years out, it's around $70 million of EBITDA. Is that a number you're comfortable with given the platform you have today and what you see ahead of you over the next 2 years? Thank you.
Leave it to Robert Winslow to ask that question. So Robert, I will make one comment. As you know, we don't give earnings guidance. However, I was never one to be uncomfortable with the $90 million consensus that you guys had collectively back in 2010. And so when I look at the earnings power of the platform in which we have built, we are comfortable that there will be a gradual recovery in margin and that there has not been a fundamental shift in the consumption and demand and supply side of our industry. Now, I can tell you that what I like about our position in 14, 15, and 16 is the clues that I've given you all now related to this diversification initiative that we executed. You know, we talked about chickpeas and beans and pasta and durum wheat, bulgur and rice and all these other things we've been doing. But, you know, for me to come out and say we expect it to be around 35% lentils of our business in 13, 14, shows you that we've achieved the diversification. We're quite optimistic about our earnings potential. Food ingredients is also going to be a platform to watch in the rollout in Q2 and beyond. So really, we'll be by Q3. We hope to be fully rolling in that platform, and we're very excited about that that new area that I think will become a very meaningful part of our business.
The next question is a follow-up from Jacob Bout of CIBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, can you just provide a little color here on the contribution you're expecting from the North Dakota plant? You talked a little bit, you know, about line one, you think, being up shortly, and maybe what the incremental will be with additional lines, both from a revenue perspective, but also from an EBITDA contribution.
I think I can take the first part of that, Jacob. I mean, you know, we're expecting with three lines of capacity, the capacity of that plant will be somewhere around 115,000 tons, and so 100 to 120,000 in that range. And you know, if you look at you know, the revenue side of this business, it would likely be somewhere in the range at full, you know, ramp up. If we can achieve that in 14, we'd be looking at somewhere in the range of probably around $75 million in revenue. And the earnings profile, all we've been able to say is that as that platform becomes material, we are planning the potential of a rollout of a segment so that you can track those earnings separately, and you'll be able to understand that and our branded pasta business together as a different margin profile than our current segment of pulses and grain. What I can tell you is that we expect it to be the highest margin profile, followed by our pulses and grains, followed by our supply chain management and distribution.
Our last question today comes from John Chu of AltaCorp Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Murray. I just wanted to follow up on this diversification strategy on both the product side and on focusing more on in South America and Southeast Asia. Can you comment about how this might impact the marketing and distribution-related costs and what that might do to your inventory levels as well? I'm assuming we'll see them both go up as you roll out those strategies going forward.
Yeah, this is Gitan here. We won't see a major difference in the inventory levels because we would just move from one commodity to the other. So that's part of our diversification strategy. What was the
second part is marketing, sales, and distribution costs.
Yeah, and again, the costs won't change neither because globally our distribution channels are set with the same buyers globally and the same distribution channels.
I mean, John, we're definitely attempting to, you know, look at when demand is more normalized, our model is simple. It's what we just term as a capacity utilization model, where what we're trying to do is in 108 countries around the world, we are skimming the opportunities that fit our asset base and our product mix. Now, when there is no demand, you have to force product in to make cash flow to cover your high fixed costs. When there is demand, you pick and choose markets. Now, you know, if you want to understand this better, John, go back and look at the historical geographic distribution of our sales, and you'll see wild swings in the geography, which actually shows our strength of our global distribution platform, where if India is not demanding in 2011, for instance, I think it was, our India sales one quarter went down to 15 million, our regional sales went down to $18 million. The next year in the same period, it was like $100 million. So we can move around the world, and you'll see the Middle East, North Africa as our main region where we can ramp up sales if we have to, but our ideal is to be more diversified across all of them. South America is a market that demands regularly, and Gaetan some of his staff have been in market, much more frequently in markets like Mexico, Colombia, Venezuela, Chile, Argentina. These are the markets that we think have, very strong potential for growth for us.
There are no... and that brings us to the end of our questions in this session. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. I'd like to remind everyone that's still on the call that if you have any follow-up questions, you can feel free to contact us at our Regina head office, and we'd be more than happy to follow up with you. Again, thanks for attending our conference call, and I wish you all a good day.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you for joining, and have a pleasant day.